is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Connor, I'm a radio broadcast veteran, so I never make mistakes. So
I'll take the blame for that one. I turned your mic on.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay.
You just got Connored. It's my.
All right. By the way, that's my producer, Connor. We're a team. We're a very good team together. Boston up 2-1 over Philadelphia. Chris Kelly and Tyler Seguin with the goals, and Philadelphia with Matt Reed, another of those darn rookies who are on the tail of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Pittsburgh 2-1 over New Jersey. The Devils with the old-time unis today. Andy Green with the goal there. Pittsburgh has Neal and Dupuis. Boy, that James Neal is a good player. And Carolina, Minnesota, Drayson Bowman and Kyle Brodziak scoring in a 1-1 tie. Okay, it's at 12:30. We're joined now by Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey. Bruce, how are you this afternoon?
Very well, thanks, Alan. How about yourself?
I'm good. Let's start with what everybody's talking about, your opinion of the hit and the impact and whether or not it was dirty.
Oh, boy. It was a little bit of a charge, you know. Saric was coming real hard, and his intent, I think, was to blindside Hall. I don't think his intent was to hit him in the head. Obviously, that was Taylor doing one of his little slips, and unfortunately he slipped into trouble rather than out of it. To me it was charging, and so I can understand why, you know, hard hits are going to get reactions from teams and from players, even if they're supposedly clean. I know there's this big thing in the media, why do teams react to hard hits? Well, they react to violent hits, and even if they're within the rules, they're going to respond to those. And the Oilers, I guess they responded appropriately right at the time. I actually caught the video of it after the fact, but I think Whitney probably did the right thing. But the most appropriate thing to do was to beat the darn Flames, and that's what they did.
Well, we had a conversation online on the blog last night, and
yeah,
I was of the opinion that, you know, you beat them by winning and not
And
the other thing about it is that if you're going to go around and get the reputation of reacting, then you're going to spend the night in the penalty box, and that gives the other team a massive advantage because they know that you've got a short fuse, right?
Right. Well, I have an old saying, you know, I used to say it in the 80s when teams used to try and goon it up with the Oilers occasionally then. And my response was always hit them where it hurts, in the net.
Yeah.
And score on the power play and dissuade them that way by putting the numbers on the big board and beating them. And they were able to do that last night and put a real hurt on Calgary's playoff chances.
It was a huge one and devastating for the Flames. The goals last night, especially the first two, are for me the difference between any kind of a rebuild between 07 and 09 and now. These kids are ridiculously skilled.
Yes.
I mean, the goal last night, the first one was terrific, and that Jordan Eberle is I kept saying Joey Mullen, and I'm not going to bring Mike Bossy up, but that guy is a marksman of the first caliber.
Yeah, I've done the Mullen comparison with Eberle since he was in junior, to tell you the truth. And as for Bossy, I have to admit that name has crossed my lips a time or two this year in terms of the guy's ability to somehow get a shot on the net. His shot always seems to be on target. And that's what you see from some of the elite goal scorers, that even from, you know, ridiculous angles and situations, is that they get their shot on target and at least give it a chance to go in.
When this season is over, and I know we've still got 11 games, and as I mentioned earlier, there's still a lot to write, and it could look a lot brighter than it did a week ago for this team if they continue to win and play well. When you look back on this season, what will be your strongest impressions and your strongest memories from the year?
Well, obviously having the rookie in the Calder race that promises to be a big part of this team for many, many years is a huge plus. To me, the most pleasant surprise of the year, I was frankly expecting Nugent Hopkins to be really good, and he is. My most pleasant surprise is the emergence of a first defense pairing, which really was a huge question mark on this team and all year. I mean, you know, on your blog, Doug, the questions have been, well, we've only got two top four defensemen, or we maybe have three or two and a half top four defensemen. And as for top pairing guys, well, geez, we don't really have any if Whitney's not all right. And all of a sudden we have two, because Petrie and Smead have been lining up. They've been starting in their own end of the ice. They've been taking on the Nash and the Thornton and the Ginla and the Perry of the other team. and they've been out shooting, out scoring, and turning the play in the right direction time and again against the vaunt of the other teams. And that, to me, that is a top pairing. I don't, you know, if it's not like a 20 game mirage, which I really don't think it is, Smead's been good all year, and Petrie's been coming on gangbusters. And to me, the possibility of having a, what is it, 24 and 26 year old defense pair with good years ahead of them, is a very exciting prospect, because that was something this team absolutely had to have.
In conversation with Bruce McCurdy from Cult of Hockey at the Edmonton Journal. Bruce, I was very vocal, and I didn't think the Tom Gilbert Schultz trade was full value for the Edmonton Oilers. After seeing Schultz and his calm feet for a few games now, although I still don't think the trade was an even deal, Schultz has been very impressive with those calm feet. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, that's I think that's one of Louise's terms, and absolutely, calm feet describes that guy. And he does a whole lot of real subtle things to separate guys from the puck, or make them less dangerous, or lift their stick just as the puck is coming through. Just proper defensive reactionary plays, responses to what's happening immediately in front of him. That's very impressive. I always liked the guy in Minnesota, but you, for that kind of player, you need to have a constant exposure to him. Because for one thing, when he's on his game, it's quite easy to not notice him at all.
Last week, I talked to Jeff Gershell, who's got a background in nutrition and health and rehab for athletes. And we talked at length about not necessarily Ryan Whitney per se, but injuries of that sort that are career-threatening, involving the feet, and how long it takes to recover. And his opinion was, Ryan Whitney, may be in the fall a much better player. Have we seen enough, though, to really question whether Ryan Whitney is ever going to get back to the levels that we saw when he first arrived?
Oh, sure. I'm questioning it all the time. I mean, there are he has become his skating certainly wasn't a negative when he came here, but it is here. It is now, and a very major one. He's slow to respond, and his body doesn't react to his instincts, and that kind of has his game, I think, a little bit at sixes and sevens. So I think to some extent he's going to just have to relearn his positioning and get his instincts to match up with what his body is capable of doing rather than what he thinks it's capable of. And otherwise, we can just keep our fingers crossed and hope that the long summer that the Oilers seem to enjoy every summer is going to do him a world of good. I mean, he had the long summer, real long summer last year, obviously, but there's a big difference between 4 months out of surgery and 16 months out. And even so, with ankles, who knows, right? He could come back in the fall and be 5% better, and it's not going to be enough. On the other hand, he's smart enough, and his hands are certainly good enough there's ways that he can contribute to this team. I'm just not sure he's going to be a top pair defenseman going forward.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he's without pain, apparently, from the reports we read, but his lateral movement is a concern, and as you say, he might be farther down the depth chart than the salary and the reputation would warrant based on his injury.
Well, if he's in a second pairing and anywhere close to his full game, boy, that's a real plus. Potentially.
I have to ask you this question, and I didn't proceed. We didn't have any conversation previous to this, so I'm going to ask you, and if you have to beg off, that's okay. But we became aware a couple of weeks ago about your involvement in an advanced stats think tank that the Edmonton Oilers have gathered together, cobbled together with some U of A professors and yourself and a few other folks. Can you tell me a little bit about the relationship that you have with the Oilers, whether it's you responding to their questions, or whether you feed them information, or what's the general makeup of that committee?
Well, I'm going to have to beg off for the most part. I'm sorry to say there is confidentiality in the sense that the Oilers certainly are pursuing analytics. There is an analytics working group that is designed to gain proprietary competitive advantage mm-hmm. for the team. So because of that, they don't really want us to discuss what we're discussing behind closed doors, but from a fan and an advanced stats buff point of view, I can certainly say that I think it's a big step in the right direction. Hockey analytics is far behind those of some other sports, and for a good reason, in the sense that hockey is very difficult to quantify as a flow game, unlike baseball, which of course has led the world in analytics since the 80s and probably before that, where you have an incremental game where, you know, each pitch you have a new situation that you can actually measure and put a put numbers to. In hockey, you got 12 guys that are roaming around, and sometimes the play will go on for 2 or 3 minutes without stoppage, and the players are reacting much more fluidly as opposed to playing firm positions as they do in baseball or even football, with the incremental nature where you can easily judge, well, more easily judge each player's contributions to it. And in hockey, it's a very tall order. The Sloan Analytics Conference that you would have heard about, David Staples was down there, mm-hmm. as well as a couple of people from the Oilers. Nick Wilson and Ricky Olczyk were down at that in Boston, and that was run by some real tall foreheads from MIT. And it brought in some very high-powered thinkers. Bill James, the baseball whiz, was one of the keynote speakers, as a for instance. And there were some pretty, pretty interesting ideas that are coming out of that. But really, it's a new aspect of hockey that's in its infancy. I think it's fair to say that the bloggers and the fans and, the advanced fans and the numbers nuts are way ahead of the curve and have been in much the manner that Bill James was in baseball. And I think that it's fair to say that not every NHL team is. I mean, you heard what Brian Burke had to say mm-hmm. on the subject,
yep.
Which is to say there's nothing to be learned from it. And I think he's dead wrong on that score.
Keep doing what you're doing, Brian.
yeah, exactly. Keep staying where you're staying, too. There were one of the few teams there that made the playoffs even more in the more distant past than the Oilers have. At least we've been in since the lockout, eh, Brian?
Yeah, there you go. Let me ask you, though, and yeah. I warn you, next time I'm bringing my secret decoder ring and I'll yep. ask you more questions on it. But one thing that I think any fan can pick up on from the Oilers is the verbal, and Jonathan Willis has a great item on Oilers Nation today, Tom Rennie's post game versus Calgary, and he mm-hmm. talks a lot about scoring chances in the third period, a lot about right. It's a beautiful article because it really does show signs that this information is seeping down, and mm-hmm. and that's an indication, right, that this information is being used in an intelligent way by the organization.
Yes, and I think some of the stuff they've been doing in their own way for a long time, and I frankly am just getting on board with some of what's happening at that level, so I don't want to underscore it, but I will say that I'm hearing terms that are very familiar to me from okay. stuff that I've read on your blog and others over the past 5 or so years that I've personally frequented the Oilogosphere. And some of the stuff goes back further than that. And I'm talking about terms that are introduced by the likes of Gabe Desjardins and Vic Ferrari and folks of that nature, scoring chances being just the thin edge of the wedge. There's quite a number of those sorts of things which are now being, I think, given a little bit more weight and credence than gut feel, which has sort of been the hockey's way of doing things traditionally.
Roger Nielsen gave us a lot more than white towels, didn't he?
Well, yes, he did. And as you know, David Staples at our blog, The Cult of Hockey, has been emulating one of Roger Nielsen's statistical approaches in terms of assigning credit and blame for scoring chances for and against, as opposed to doing what Dennis King is doing, which is just keeping track of chances and mm-hmm. on the ice at the time, actually trying to then come up with a qualitative assessment of who was specifically involved in that play. And originally he was doing it for goals for and against, and he since updated it to scoring chances. It's a huge project, 82 games a year of easily a couple hours work per game at minimum. I actually don't know how much time he puts into it, but when I pinch hit for him, it's been a lot.
Yeah. I think that in about another 20 years, we're all going to be a single men divorced in an old folks home, and nobody will talk to us.
Well, as long as the old folks home has a basement and it's got a solid Wi-Fi connection, we're going to be golden, right?
Yeah, and the cheesies. Bruce, thanks, man.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey, a very wise individual, and check him out on Twitter, too. He has some great stuff, not just about hockey, but the Stars and things as well, and a very fine read on Cult of Hockey at the Edmonton Journal. You want to check him out. Now, we're late, and that's my fault again. Kent Wilson from Flames Nation on the way. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.